We look now then to our brother Donald James and all the Lytham St. Anne's Ecclesia, brethren and sisters, and he shall address us upon the subject, the Confederacy of Tarshish.
My beloved brethren and sisters, it is a strange quirk of human nature, and I use that word advisedly. It means a characteristic, a sudden turn or a twist from something, an artful evasion, a smart retort. So it is a strong quirk or characteristic of our nature that it is not content to accept discoveries and truths, teachings, learned observations brought to light by their forebears. But after a while, maybe 100 years or so, it seeks to change, to disregard and to overthrow and to pour scorn and doubt upon established truths. Now this is common to every avenue of human understanding and discovery, and it predominates in matters religion. It was a common attitude found in Israel's history, as surely we realize. Psalm 78, for instance, tells us that Israel lied, they were not steadfast in Yahweh's covenant. And verse 40 of that psalm tells us, how oft did they provoke him in the wilderness and grieved him in the desert? Yea, they turned back and tempted their mighty one and limited the Holy One of Israel. It is, brethren and sisters, very sadly, a common attitude found in the ecclesia of today. It is one that weakens. It is one that perplexes and troubles the earnest seeker after a right understanding of the Spirit Word. In the early 60s, when Britain was pulling out of Aden and was leaving its naval bases in southern Arabia, the challenging power of Gog was coming to the fore and so on. There it was said of our brethren, well, we've got to think again now about this matter of Britain being the merchants of Tarshish. She cannot be this great power which is trying to come against Gog. She's evacuating the Middle East. She's departing from her colonies. She's seeking interest in Europe. Indeed, she's playing the harlot, brethren and sisters, as we shall see. And she's becoming a third-rate power. She cannot possibly be the antagonist against Gog, whom we have already looked at today. May I just quote from you from the Testimony magazine, June 74. Because of the major position that Britain held up to 30 years ago, to identify the ships of Tarshish with the British Navy seemed sound exposition. This was all the more so because Britain occupied all the places which were associated with the ships of Tarshish. And the writer goes on. Perhaps the most problematical of all is Ezekiel 38 verse 13, where the merchants of Tarshish, along with Sheba and Dedan, ask the northern invader, art thou come to take the spoil? The possibility of this applying to Britain now seems more remote than ever, because Britain has left that area and has left the role of the Jews, now the care of the Jews, and is seeking only Arab oil. And again, possibly America is going to fill the role of the latter-day ships and merchants of Tarshish. Indeed, who more fitting than America to bring God's sons from far? A very eminent writer known among the Brotherhood, brethren and sisters. Again, another one, speaking of the merchants of Tarshish, the writer says he is issuing a gentle warning that readers do not fall into the over-eager and somewhat over-credulous interpretations of former generations of the Christadelphian household. He goes on, various points of identity with scripture quotations applied to Great Britain were sometimes too readily accepted, such as, the isle shall wait for me, the ships of Tarshish first, Isaiah chapter 60, the isles are far off, and also Tarshish was thy merchant. So there, brethren and sisters, the faithful brother and sister, where were they? What was their understanding? The faithful brother and sister, acquainted with the word, brethren and sisters, will say, despite that, it is written, Britain will be there at the time of the end, at the time of the end, because Yahweh has declared it. Again, do we not realize that the Father was testing the faith of the called out ones when the course of prophecy seemed to be reversed? It happened many times in Israel's history. Again, how foolish we are if we fail to see the brevity of our own lives, 70 years, against the awesome working out of the Father's plan of the ages, 6,000 years almost to date now. How little we are in comparison, brethren and sisters. So soberly we reflect, and it has been indicated to us this morning already, that there is no prophecy now to be fulfilled before we are gathered to meet our Lord and Master in Sinai. All creation now, in every avenue, is poised, awaiting these great and mighty events which are contained here in the Word. Now Tarshish, brethren and sisters, is mentioned some 28 times in the Scriptures. The first occasion we find is Genesis chapter 10, verse 4, and it's speaking of the times after the flood when the sons of Noah were separating themselves throughout the earth. And it tells us that Tarshish, the son of Javan, who was the son of Japheth, migrated westward. Think of it, from the regions of Ararat there in Turkey, towards Europe and towards the Atlantic coast countries. In that same chapter also, we have mention of Sheba and Dedan. They're mentioned in verse 7. They were the sons of Cush, who was the son of Ham. And coming now to the times of Solomon, we have many beautiful types and shadows when we look at Solomon's kingdom, when we look at the temple there that he was building, and when we look at the association of Solomon with Hiram, king of Tyre, who was, it seems, a proselyte to the Jews' religion. Let's look at the 1st of Kings chapter 9. 1st of Kings chapter 9 and verse 26. And King Solomon made a navy of ships in Ezion Geba, which is besides Eloth or Eliot, as it is today, on the shore of the Red Sea, at the head of the Gulf of Aqaba, in the land of Edom. And Hiram sent in the navy his servants, shipmen that had knowledge of the sea, with the servants of Solomon, and they came to Ophir, from thence fetched gold, and so on. Now, again, in the 10th chapter, you will notice in verse 10, in verse 22, many other details there, but, for the king had at sea a navy of Tarshish with the navy of Hiram, and once in 3 years came the navy of Tarshish, bringing gold and silver, ivory and apes, and peacocks. And obviously there, the reference is to a Tarshish in the east. They were sailing from Ezion Geba, the head of the Gulf of Aqaba, down there past Sinai, and they were hugging the coast eastwards, towards a land not defined, but we believe it was India, thereabouts. And there they obtained, as we have read, gold and silver and ivory and apes and peacocks. But coming now to the 2nd of Chronicles chapter 20 and verse 36. 2nd of Chronicles 20 and verse 36. There it says, and he joined himself with him to make ships to go to Tarshish, and they made the ships in Ezion-Geba. So here we have an unholy alliance between Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, and Ahaziah, a very wicked king in Israel, it says, and they joined in a venture now to attempt to do what Solomon did in ages gone by, to go to Ophir for gold. But it says there that Yahweh divided them in their ambitions and destroyed their ships, the ships at Ezion-Geba or Eliat. Helps us, brothers and sisters, as we shall see later on. And again, thinking of the isolation of the location of Tarshish. Jonah, you remember, took a ship and he sailed not eastward, he couldn't do. He sailed westward down the Mediterranean Sea from Joppa, and there he was thinking to escape from Yahweh. And so there we have an eastern and a western Tarshish. And we note that the exact locations are not mentioned in the word. But back of our minds we say, well, what is the relationship between the ships of Tarshish and Tyre? But Tyre is the headquarters, the warehouse of premises of the merchant system, the organized center. And Tarshish and the ships refer to the particular secret location from where the goods are obtained. Obviously, we see the point of keeping secret now where they're going to obtain these goods from. It's secret. And so the ships of Tarshish then are the carriers, the transporters, the means of moving the merchandise. And so, coming to Ezekiel chapter 27 and verse 25, Ezekiel chapter 27 and verse 25, the ships of Tarshish did sing of thee, they sang of Tyre in thy market, and thou wast replenished and made very glorious in the midst of the sea. Now, just while we think about merchant systems, brethren and sisters, there is another merchant system in the earth, long established. It's one who trades in, as Revelation 18 verse 13 tells us, in the precious things of the earth, but it also trades in the bodies and the souls of men. And it has its depots throughout the earth. In every town and village there you find the Catholic system. And its headquarters are at Rome. Two merchant systems there. Now we gain a great deal of understanding regarding our subject by looking at history. This we must do. And so, coming to Ezekiel chapter 26 and verse 3, it says, behold, I am against thee, O Tyrus. And verse 7 says to us, for thus saith Adonai Yahweh, behold, I will bring upon Tyrus Nebuchadnezzar, a king of Babylon. So we're way back in history now. And Nebuchadnezzar was successful. But Tyre moved its headquarters from off the mainland to the Isle of Tyre, half a mile off the coast there, and Alexander, later in history, in the year BC 332, there he overcame that island of Tyre, and there, as this verse 12 tells you, he laid the timber and the stones and the dust in the midst of the water as he built there a causeway along which his troops went to sack the island of Tyre. But, brothers and sisters, we come to a very, very important point. You cannot conquer a merchant system. Neither Nebuchadnezzar nor Alexander could take that system back again and establish it in their own countries. That was an impossibility. The conqueror could not do this. And thus, when we come to Isaiah 23 now, Isaiah 23 and verse 6, there it says, pass ye over to Tarshish, howl, ye inhabitants of the isle, is this your joyous city, whose antiquity is of ancient days? Her own feet, notice it, her own feet shall carry her afar off to Sodom, who hath taken this counsel against Tyre, the crowning city, whose merchants are princes, whose traffickers are the noble of the earth. Again, coming over to verse 11 of that same chapter, or verse 12 rather, and he said, thou shalt no more rejoice, O thou oppressed virgin, daughter Zidon, arise, pass over to Chittim, to Cyprus, there also thou should have no rest. So this merchant system then, established again, now in Cyprus, but there, you see, it is to have no rest. And so this merchant system, it moved from Chittim, it moved to Carthage, to Genoa, to Venice, to Spain, to the Netherlands in the North Sea, and finally, over the centuries, he came to rest in Britain. We glean this from the writer Ruskin, his work, The Stones of Venice. And so, Tyre then became established in the Tin Islands, or the Cassiterides, or Baratanic, as it was called, a name which was imposed by the Phoenicians upon, let's note, a secret source of much of their wealth. Now we gain this information, brethren and sisters, from the authority of Encyclopedia Britannica. And so to these islands then came the men of Tyre. They came to Cornwall, they came to Devon, they came to the Lake District, as I have read. And they carried away the precious metals of those days. And what were they? Copper and tin and lead. And so Ezekiel chapter 27 verse 12 tells us, Tarshish was thy merchant by reason of the multitude of all kinds of riches, with silver and iron and tin and lead they traded in thy fairs. Question then, is Britain the latter day representative of Tarshish? Without doubt, brethren and sisters. I refer you to Elpis Israel, can't quote to it now. There you will find much evidence given by Brother Thomas. But let us look for a moment at some of the present day evidence around us. During the last general election in this country, Mr. Neil Kinnock, the leader of the opposition, there he accused Mrs. Thatcher. He said, and his words were, Britain was the workshop of the world, and you have made it the warehouse of the world. What a telling statement, brethren and sisters. And thus, as you see, the national skills and the expertise of this nation is largely redundant. Everywhere you go, you see great factories for sale or to let. But Britain is prospering. Britain is prospering. At a recent dinner held in the Guildhall in London, with the Lord Mayor present and 600 dignitaries all interested in the shipping world, the Prime Minister was to be there, but he had to go to America due to the crisis that we've just come through. There we have, or they listened to various statements, and it's interesting just to note what was said. Recalling that as an island race, the history of Britain has been shaped by the sea, Lord Stirling, a Jew, outlined the historic role played by the merchant service in this country's history. Shipping has always been and remains our lifeblood, he said. Some 95% of British import and export trade is still transported by sea. And our industry contributes some $4 billion a year to the balance of payments, one of the biggest contributors to invisible earnings. Another eminent man in the shipping world thrilled the audience there by saying, he was a leading figure in international shipping, his audience was delighted to hear him assert that London was still the centre of the shipping world, and British shipping could grow again. Is Britain prospering, brethren and sisters? She certainly is. Did you know that Amsterdam is the centre of the world's diamond trade? Indeed it is. But all those diamonds there, brethren and sisters, pass through London first of all. And there, in that trade, that traffic there, that merchanting, there it becomes a valuable source of invisible earnings, which affect considerably the monthly trade figures of this country. May I quote you from the World of Business? Here, it's regarding takeover bids. We all know what that means. Now then, as international takeover artists, the British leave everybody in the dust. Everybody in the dust, and it goes on to tell us that Canada is nearer to Calais than the British for the British businessman. And every $3 that is spent in Britain now, an astonishing $1, you can put it out in proportion, is invested overseas, acquiring businesses overseas. Britain leads the field, far above the competitors who are France and Japan. It says, within a decade, Britain's entrepreneurs and investors have re-won an empire on which the sun never sets and restored the kingdom to its position as a major international creditor and provider of capital. That's not a situation that squares with decline and fall scenarios. As the Financial Times notes, this newly created patrimony is a large nest egg for when North Sea oil runs out. So it goes on. But there, brethren and sisters, how remarkable. How wonderful when we think about it. And so, British made now means made in Taiwan, made in Hong Kong. And thus the merchants of Tarshish, oh yes, ever following out, as the harlot depicts them in the scriptures, There they are increasing their riches at the expense of the poor. She's described as a harlot in Isaiah 23. And Britain is prepared to take advantage of any situation which will bring her added wealth. She left the colonies. She desired to go into Europe. She saw it was more profitable there. No, it's not, brethren and sisters. And very shortly she's going to come out and go back again to those colonies, to those young lions. And so, summing it up, why dirty the hands of the nation when invested wealth makes wealth and riches make more riches? But coming now to the Confederacy of Tarshish, with all the young lions thereof. Sheba was an Arab kingdom adjacent to Aden down in the south there. It's off the map, unfortunately. And there in its history we find that her chief cities, which have been recently dug up by archaeologists, bring before us the fact that Marib, one of those cities, had a population of over 1 million. And it goes on to tell us that their chief industry was spices. Spices and incense used for religious purposes in that particular day. Ezekiel 27 and verse 22, it points out to us, the merchants of Sheba and Raama were thy merchants. They occupied in thy fairs with chief of all spices and with all precious stones and gold. Now Dedan is on the opposite side of the Arabian Peninsula there, and it's in the region known now as Muscat, on the eastern tip of the Persian Gulf. And according to Ezekiel 27, 15 and verse 20, they traded in horn and ivory and ebony and precious clothes. And the young lions, Tarshish being the old mother lion. A lioness is described by the Hebrew word Ari, and it simply means a lion violent. Whereas a young lion is the Hebrew word kephir, and it speaks of a young lion just weaned and ready to ravin. That word ravin, that is to obtain by violence, to devour men. Two psalms come to note regarding lions. Like as a lion that is greedy for his prey, and as it were a young lion lurking in secret places. Psalm 104, the young lions roar after their prey and seek their meat from God. During our own lifetimes, brethren and sisters, we have seen the young lions grow up. The colonies, Australia, Canada, so on. We've seen them all grow up. They have found and wanted and have been given their own independence. Yet they all respect the mother lion. They are all bound together as the Commonwealth nations, all accepting Queen Elizabeth as their sovereign. It's interesting to look at the eldest lion. Not very prominent in the picture at the moment, brethren and sister, but I believe it will be. Tidings out of the north, Britain and the east, India, shall trouble him. Just a thought. At the moment, India, rather in an unstable situation. Last week, she's just had another change of government. But she's a mighty world power, brethren and sisters. And South Africa, how interesting, once a problem child, and now she's returning to the fold of the Commonwealth nations in preparation for, well, our subject, the young lions. But one says, America? America? One of the young lions? Well, she does not claim Queen Elizabeth as her sovereign, but let me just quote to you something from Brother Thomas. Herald of the Kingdom, 1852. And we remember, before ever the nation of Israel was a nation, they were scattered throughout the earth, just a few in the land, that's all. And Brother Thomas wrote, he said, Sheba and Dedan and the merchants of Tarshish with all the young lions thereof. This is the Anglo-Indian power beyond the rivers of Kushistan that is east from Jerusalem and beyond the Euphrates and the Tigris. The British possess Aden and Sheba, but not Dedan as yet. He goes on, their East India Company of merchants are the merchants of Tarshish, who govern India under the auspices of the British Lion. This northern and eastern power, which sends its ambassadors by the sea, and you remember the quotation there, it's Isaiah 18, verse 2, with its overshadowing wings, and it does overshadow, we've seen it overshadow Israel, and so he goes on to deal with it, finally coming face to face with the forces of Gog, which are presented to us in Ezekiel 38. But, the point I'm coming to, he says, unless aided by the United States in the approaching contest, what is he saying? He says, the British power, old as it is, will endure as long as this confederacy. Yes. Britain cannot fail until her mission is accomplished. Energized of God. She has withstood the world in arms. She will do it again. She has wealth enough. Men will not be wanting. She will gain many victories and experience many defeats. Still, she will carry on the war until Christ appears to conquer for God and for himself and people. Now, he says, it is quite possible, therefore, that an alliance will be formed as much desired by America as by Britain. Be this as it may, Christ will judge them both, and that power will fare the best which yields most promptly to his commands and shows the most favour to his people Israel. How interesting, brethren and sisters. Now, the word teaches us that all nations are to be blessed in Abraham and in his seed. Now, first of all, we look at ourselves. Do we imagine that we ourselves are going to be blessed with eternal life without the word of life changing our hearts and our minds and driving out of our characters the pride and the arrogance of the flesh? No, we have to become childlike and teachable. And likewise with the nations who, according to Matthew chapter 25, when the throne of David is occupied by Yeshua, when he sits upon the throne of his glory, there the nations are to be gathered before him, and they are to be divided into the sheep nations and the goat nations. Let's come then now to Isaiah chapter 2. Isaiah chapter 2 and verse 12. Isaiah chapter 2, verse 12. For the day of Yahweh of hosts shall be upon every one that is proud and lofty, and upon every one that is lifted up, and he shall be brought low. Verse 16. And upon all the ships of Tarshish, and upon all pleasant pictures, and the loftiness of man shall be bowed down, and the haughtiness of men shall be made low, and Yahweh alone shall be exalted in that day. Still in Isaiah 23 now. Isaiah 23 and verse 8. Isaiah 23, verse 8. Who hath taken this counsel against Tyre, the crowning city, whose merchants are princes, whose traffickers are the honourable of the earth? Yahweh of hosts hath purposed it, to stain the pride of all glory, and to bring into contempt all the honourable of the earth. Again, verse 14 of the chapter, howl, ye ships of Tarshish, for your strength is laid waste. And then, coming down now to verse 18, and the merchandise of Tyre and Tarshish, shall be holiness to Yahweh. It shall not be treasured nor laid up as it is at the moment, for her merchandise shall be for them that dwell before Yahweh to eat sufficiently and for durable clothing. How is this to be brought about? Let's go to Psalm 48 now. Psalm 48. And there it says in verse 7, we notice the context first of all. It's the great is the city of our God in verse 1. Beautiful for situation, the pride and joy of the whole earth, and so on. It speaks of the kings who had assembled and passed by together. They saw it, they marveled and they troubled. The captive kings, brethren and sisters of the earth, they come to see the glory of Zion. They're ashamed and they pass away to their death. And then verse 7. Thou breakest the ships of Tarshish with an east wind. Thou breakest the ships of Tarshish with an east wind. We note the context, this kingdom of David and so on. And he goes on to tell us, and I believe, brethren, once I thought that, all right, it was a naval disaster. But no, of course it's not. It's not a naval disaster. It speaks of the saints. Of the saints, the kings of the east. The kings of a sun's rising. Revelation 16, verse 12. The saints, the kings, they are the east wind there. The destroying force. Not literal ships, but that which is figuratively represented by them. The merchant pride and power of Tarshish. Let's look a little closer at this, brethren, sisters. And this, brethren, sisters, is where? The wonder of such subjects, the more we go deeper into them, the more we're convinced of the truth of them. Let's come then to Ezekiel chapter 28 now. Ezekiel chapter 28. And we look at verse 14. Ezekiel 28 and verse 14. Thou art the anointed cherub that covereth, and I have set thee so. Thou wast upon the holy mountain of God. And the reference, if you look back in those verses, brethren and sisters, is to the time when Tyre under Hiram associated with Solomon. And there, the phrase I'm coming to is in the last part of verse 14, thou hast walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire. Now the stones of fire in the days of Solomon were the high priesthood, the priesthood and the eldership of Israel in the glories and wonders of that typical kingdom. That's the picture that comes to our minds. And so the stones of fire, let's just examine those words now. Think of the precious cornerstone, Zechariah, the headstone. Yeshua, the anointed. You think of the living stones, his brethren. The word stones itself, it comes from the Hebrew word eben, and it means to build. It means to obtain children. What comes into our mind? Let them make me a sanctuary that I may dwell among them. The fullness and the meaning of the Yahweh name, I will be mighty one. I will become mighty ones. The divine family, brethren and sisters, the stones and the fire. The fire there is the Hebrew word eish, and it comes from burning, fiery. One thinks of the cherubim. But Justinius, there he opens up the matter for us and he says, it speaks of gems, gems of a fiery splendor. And in Malachi chapter 3, verse 17, there we have the beautiful reference to Yahweh's jewels. Yahweh's jewels. If you care to look at it, for a moment, shut up. And there the Father says, in a day when I will appoint, I will bring them forth, and they shall be mine. So the precious jewels, the stones, you put these thoughts together, these truths together, brethren and sisters. And there it's the saints, obviously. In short, it's a resurrected, worthy saints, changed into spirit. The stones of fire. How wonderful when we contemplate these beautiful matters. And so, let's come then to Psalm 45. Psalm 45. Very quickly we look there. It's a beautiful picture, brethren and sisters, of the glories which are yet to come to Zion. The glories of the kingdom. The marriage of the bride and the bridegroom. And there it tells us, just one verse slipped in as it were, and the daughter of Tyre shall be there with a gift. The gift, she's coming to pay tribute. Even the rich among the people shall entreat thy favour. And Psalm 72. Psalm 72, a psalm which opens up to us, of course, the wonders of the kingdom. Give the king thy judgment, it says in verse 1. And goes on to tell us he shall have dominion over the nations and so on. And then behold, the destiny and the changed circumstances of Tarshish and her confederacy. Look what it says in verse 10. Her ships there to bring Israel's... Sorry, I'm just thinking of something else. But verse 10, the ships of Tarshish and of the isle shall bring presents. The kings of Sheba and Seba shall offer gifts. Yea, all kings shall fall down. But at the establishing of the kingdom, their brethren and sisters, the kings of Tarshish and the isle, bring, paying tribute there. Paying tribute. And the quotation that came to my mind, her ships to bring Israel's sons from far to the presence of the Holy One of Israel. Isaiah 60, I haven't time to look at it. So here then, brethren and sisters, is the age-lasting beauty and the wonderment of our subject. The certain, the unfailing truth. The wonderful determination of our Heavenly Father, the Eternal Spirit. How soberly then the truth should affect us. The poor of this world, yet we hope and trust, found rich in faith. And bound up in these wonderful and transcending truths concerning the destiny of the present great ones of the earth, they're going to come to their end, are the promised rewards. The promised rewards from the Father to his faithful children. In wonder and in thankfulness, we recognize the grace and the mercy of Yahweh towards us. And contritely, we listen to the words of Yahshua. He that overcometh shall sit with me in my throne, and he shall have power over the nations. And our spirits are quieted by a great sense of awe and wonderment which sweeps over us. It overwhelms us, brethren and sisters, that such are the honours which are to be bestowed. The Father has said so. They're going to be bestowed upon the believers of his wonderful word. And so Psalm 58, the righteous shall rejoice when he seeth the vengeance, so that a man shall say, Verily, truly, there is a reward for the righteous. Verily, Ahil judgeth the earth. Proverbs 13:22, speaking of the father's promised inheritance, it says, the wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just. Oh, brethren and sisters, in the context of our subject, the wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just. In Ecclesiastes 2, verse 26, for Yahweh giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner he giveth travail. To Tyre, Tarshish, he giveth travail to gather and to heap up, that he may give it, that Yahweh may give it to him that is good before Elohim. And Brother Thomas, he commented on this word. He said, the wealth of the daughter of Tyre is the wealth of the sinner. To the sinner God giveth labor to gather and to heap up, that he may give it to the good in the presence of the Elohim. We earnestly desire and pray that, brethren and sisters, may be our happy lot through the grace and the mercy of Yahweh.